This episode of the Farmers Weekly podcast is brought to you with NFU Mutual, offering you tailored farming insurance and a local personal service.
Theoretically, under the regulations, everybody should have a contract in place, and subject to some exceptions, you'd expect those contracts to be broadly for fixed terms and broadly to specify the price. Now, without that detail, it's very difficult to say precisely whether or not the buyer is entitled to reduce the price retrospectively.
Dairy farmers could launch legal action over backdated price cuts. Can a partnership approach between industry leaders and the Scottish Government really deliver a better future for farming? And we discover that urban youngsters often know more about farming than we think they do. Welcome to the Farmers Weekly podcast. I'm Johan Tasker.
I'm Louise Impey.
And I'm Hugh Broome.
We go straight to our top story. Welsh dairy farmers are being urged to seek legal advice after being told their milk price is being cut by 6 pence per litre, a reduction that's being backdated to the 1st of September. Well, processor Welsh Milk is blaming poor market conditions and says the decision to slash the farm gate price was not taken lightly. NFU Cymru has told affected farmers to take legal advice and complain to the agricultural supply chain adjudicator. Well, here at Farmers Weekly, we spoke to Mark Jones, partner at retail and supply chain law firm Gordons, and I started by asking Mark whether backdated price cuts are, in fact, legal.
I suppose the typical lawyer's answer is it depends on what the contract says, because without that detail, it's very difficult to say precisely whether or not the buyer is entitled to reduce the price retrospectively. What I can say is that, you know, typically contracts, whether subject to the fair dealing obligations, milk regulations or otherwise, generally don't include provisions which permit the buyer of products to reduce the price retrospectively. You know, what you typically expect to see is a price for a period and absent some agreement varying the price consensually, it wouldn't usually be lawful to retrospectively reduce the price.
How do you see this playing out then, Mark?
I think it's a really interesting thing. I mean, the price of milk has fallen dramatically and suddenly, and you know, you've got the tie-in really to the date on which the fair dealing obligations for milk came into force. So they were compulsory in relation to every contract from July 25, so quite a few months ago. And then, you know, theoretically, under the regulations, everybody should have a contract in place, and subject to some exceptions, you'd expect those contracts to be broadly for fixed terms and broadly to specify the price. Now, of course, if you buy milk, it's a bit of a problem if the person you're selling it to then won't pay you the price. So there's a sort of combination of questions really which will determine how the market plays out. Has everyone contracted for 12 months from July for fixed prices, in which case we probably won't see a lot of issues in the marketplace, or do we have contracts coming to an end around now, but somewhere in the supply chain someone's got a fixed price, in which case the middleman, if I can put it like that, so a processor of milk by way of example, if their customer's paying them a lower price, but the farmer, they've contracted with the farmer to pay a higher price, then they're in a bit of a pickle. And in those circumstances, you know, often irrespective of the law, you have to take a bit of a risk and say, well, I can't pay you that because I can't afford to. Now, that might not be lawful, but you might see that type of activity happening in the marketplace.
And Mark, what can farmers do in a situation like this?
They can do lots of things, really. I mean, if there has been a price agreed for a set period and the buyer of the milk is not complying with that price, then they can, under the regulations, go to the purchaser and make a complaint. So every contract should have a dispute resolution procedure in it, which sets out the suppliers, the farmers' right to make a complaint to the purchaser of that milk, and they would have to resolve that complaint satisfactorily. Now, if that didn't happen, they can go to the adjudicator, and the adjudicator would then gather the evidence and determine whether or not the complaint was valid. And if it is valid, the adjudicator can instruct the purchaser of the milk to compensate the supplier of the milk. They can fine the business purchaser, the purchaser of the milk. And what you can also do outside of that regime is go to a solicitor and ask them to look at the contract, tell you if you've got a claim, and write to the purchaser of the milk setting out the reasons why what they're proposing to do is illegal. And if they didn't remedy it, i.e. pay the proper price, then you can sue them. And, you know, there's a regulator there, and, you know, to my knowledge, hasn't seen much action yet, but he's there for a reason.
Complaining, though, is often easier said than done. It's a small marketplace out there. There aren't that many alternative buyers. Should things go wrong with the person buying your milk at the moment?
What's interesting about fair dealing obligations and milk is that farmers might find themselves in a bit of a tricky position in relation to their customer base, because it's often the case there's not that many processors you can sell your milk to. So there's sort of a live question, or there'll certainly be a live question for some farmers here who find themselves in a position where, you know, the processor, the person purchasing the milk off the farmer, is doing something which breaches the regulations, but the reality is that there's only one customer to sell to. And that puts you in a more challenging situation in terms of your appetite to do anything about it. So, you know, the regulations, I think, are a good step forward in, you know, improving fairness in the supply chain, but it isn't a panacea, because, you know, market conditions always make these things a bit tricky.
That's Mark Jones from specialist law firm Gordons. Louise, I asked Mark the question and he gave a typical lawyer's answer, I guess. Are backdated price cuts legal? He said it depends.
Well, it shouldn't be legal, should it? I mean, honestly, these guys, they've got contracts. I mean, what's the point of having a contract if the person can then turn, or the company that you're dealing with can then turn around and treat you like that? You know, it was only last year, I think, wasn't it, that these new regulations were introduced. And the whole point of those was to make milk contracts fairer and more transparent for farmers. And then you get a situation like this. Now, I know that there are some flaws, as they say, or they say some flaws emerged in those regulations. But, you know, this is really bad news. And it comes at a, you know, a terrible time for these farmers. And I'm just amazed that they haven't got more protection and that the company can do this. And I know they said they were very sorry, but it's just not good enough, is it?
Hugh, we're gonna find out. I mean, it's fair to say that the fair dairy regulations are going to be tested as this as Welsh Milk has imposed this backdated price drop.
Yeah, it will be tested. And look, yeah, so that's a road test for that. I think, regardless of this Welsh Milk scenario, and that's obviously really bad news for all the guys involved there, and the fact that they're trying to backdate it, and all of the above that Louise has just said. But the dairy market we're heading into is going to get, I think it's probably going to get rockier. And when you read most of the data at the moment, it could get a bit rockier. No one's actually sure how rocky it's going to be, because we've had a sort of a market of shortage, like a lot of our markets at the moment, particularly in red meat, for example. And then suddenly the taps have turned on because everyone's produced. It's sort of caught up with it globally. So sort of four auctions ago, back in August, I suppose, is when it really started to drop, when we saw that New Zealand butter price go from what it was, $8,000. Now it's down to about six, six and a half, six, two. that's dropped quite a lot in four auctions. They had another one the other day and it dropped again. So suddenly these local producers are trying to, you know, position their or put their position right in terms of value because they're paranoid that if they keep paying more and so on and so forth. So I think what's really important is like everything we always say about every sector and everything else is the, you know, you've got to know your costs. All of the above, that's like teaching your grandmother to suck eggs. But I think what's still missing from this marketplace, and I know there are plenty of people now, and we saw at the Dairy Day the other day, an association now for producer groups. These farmers have got to get together. And I know it's not the panacea, and I know it doesn't always help, but the more that you're together, the more chance you've got of survival than if you're a standalone target being pummeled by these price drops. If you've got one person negotiating on behalf of a collective of you, you've got half a chance of survival and getting some traction in the marketplace.
6p drop, 6p doesn't sound very much, but when you multiply it up to a farm that's probably producing 1.65 million litres of milk a year, that's £8,000 a month down on what they were expecting.
These price drops are massive. You know, we had, I mean, these guys are talking 6p. There was one of the cheese processors, they were down 8p. We've seen Freshways drop 6p. Now, bear in mind Freshways, and it gives you an idea of where some of these processors thought the market was going. Because I think back in August, Freshways put 2p on. You know, they thought, oh, we've got to keep these guys going. And obviously, a lot of the farmers were really stressed about drought and lack of forage, which is still an issue. Although people have had a few cheeky cuts of silage in the last couple of 3 weeks. So it shows how volatile the market is at the moment. But yes, it's about, we just got to get, you know, they've got to get, these guys have got to get together. We've all got to do it as a producer, whatever we're producing, quite frankly, to stand half a chance. But it's just an illustration of where it's needed in the marketplace.
The ironic thing here being that Welsh Milk was actually set up by farmers. It is a farmer-owned co-op.
Yeah, it is ironic, but ultimately it's a business, isn't it? And I get where they're coming from because they're trying to cover their position because they don't want to be caught short and be outpriced and buy expensive raw material only to sell processed product X months, weeks down the line, which are way out of kilter. So that's where they're coming from. But look, yeah, it's tough wherever you go. And arable farmers listening to this will be going, yeah, but the wheat price is crap and da-da-da-da-da, and we're in a buying group. It's a global market. And yes, buying groups help. They give you some protection. Ultimately, it's a global market, though. Another thing that I picked up the other, this was back in July, actually, and it was an article that appeared in one of my social media thingies, which I think gives an indicator. It's the start of an indication of why this market suddenly changed. We've had a shortage. Now there's lots of production. The UK market has done really well in terms of production, and we produced more than for a long time. Ironic, given that it was a drought, but the reason is everyone put the cows onto TMR. It's a very managed intake, therefore got beautiful flatline production versus trying to graze them efficiently. But China's the one that stands out for me. Their dairy self-sufficiency, back in July, there was some an article came out which said their dairy self-sufficiency went from 62.7 to 85% in just 4 years. Now, that's what, 10-ish, 13-odd percent increase. But on the Chinese market, that is a massive volume. And if suddenly they are not taking that off the global market because they're producing it themselves, that is going to start to create some lakes, which is obviously what we're seeing happening now. Now, whether it's because of that or not, I don't know. I think everyone's just stepped on the gas in terms of production because there was a place to fill in the market.
Well, we have at Farmers Weekly approached Welsh Milk for comment. We're waiting to hear from them. We also went to DEFRA. DEFRA told us we expect all dairy processors to treat their suppliers fairly and in line with the requirements of the Fair Dealing Milk Obligations 2024. Where farmers believe those obligations are not being met, we would encourage them to first raise the issue directly with their processor through the dispute resolution process. And if the matter cannot be resolved, they can contact the agricultural supply chain adjudicator for further support and, if necessary, raise a formal complaint.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
And now a special word with this week's podcast partner, NFU Mutual, and I'm joined by NFU Mutual's Rosie Monk. Rosie, NFU Mutual, not just about insurance, you offer a range of services to farmers.
Yeah, so NFU Mutual offers a wide range of products and services. Our local NFU Mutual agents work closely with farmers and really understand the day-to-day challenges you face. And because they're both based in your community, they're always nearby to offer friendly personal support. The NFU Mutual team do more than just help farmers insure rural properties, vehicles and livestock. We also have expert financial advisors across the UK who are well-versed in the needs of farming businesses, and they're able to support with things like inheritance tax planning and making the most of available reliefs. They can advise on a wide range of NFU Mutual products and others we offer from specialist providers, and they'll take time to explain the services we offer and the charges so that everything's clear from the start. And finally, when it comes to health and safety, we've got NFU Mutual Risk Management Services with specialist consultants who will go out and visit farms to offer practical advice and support.
There's lots of different insurance companies out there, but what makes NFU Mutual different to other insurers?
Yeah, so there's a lot that makes NFU Mutual stand out from other insurers. For starters, our heritage. We were founded by farmers for farmers, and we've been supporting the industry for over 115 years now. So that means we really get farming and the challenges that come with it. We keep things simple and transparent, so there's no admin fees for making changes to your policy and no extra charges for paying monthly by direct debit. We also work closely with farming unions to make sure farmers' interests are front and centre when it comes to industry development. And we also offer mutual bonus, rewarding loyalty and giving customers a saving on the renewal premium of their general insurance policies. But it's not all about the products and services we offer. Beyond insurance, we're committed to supporting the farming community through initiatives that reflect your values and protect your way of life, from educating young farmers and promoting farm safety to tackling rural poverty. We're proud to play a part. In 2024 alone, we donated £3.25 million to causes across the UK and invested over £440,000 to help fight rural crime and support local communities.
So a strong pedigree then, lots of heritage. How are you adapting at NFU Mutual to support farmers in the modern day?
We're always looking ahead at NFU Mutual to make sure our cover keeps up with the way farming is evolving. That means ensuring new tech like automated machinery and developing innovative products like parametric insurance that is triggered by weather events, not just claims. We're also exploring how we can develop offerings to support natural capital projects so farmers can make the most of opportunities in this growing area.
And Rosie, how can farmers get hold of NFU Mutual?
NFU Mutual have over 280 local agency offices across the UK, which means we are always close by. Whether you want to give them a call, send them an email or pop in for a chat, your local office is there ready to help you. You can easily find their contact details by heading to nfumutual.co.uk.
Rosie Monk from NFU Mutual, this week's Farmers Weekly podcast partner. Thank you very much.
The Farmers Weekly podcast.
Now, the Scottish Government's announced an extra £7.4 million for its Future Farming Investment Scheme, designed to help farmers and crofters improve their environmental performance. It takes the total fund to £21.4 million, an increase announced by Scotland's Rural Affairs Cabinet Secretary, Mari Goujon, at NFU Scotland's annual conference. Scottish farm leaders welcomed the increase, but said farmers needed a longer-term approach to agricultural policy. Well, Farmers Weekly's Phil Case went along to the conference and asked the same question to Mari Goujon himself.
To be honest, I agree with a lot of what the NFUS is calling for and asking for. When we were taking the Agriculture and Rural Communities Act through the Scottish Parliament last year, that was a call that pretty much came from all sides unanimously. And I'd outlined at that time, and I make the same commitment today, that as soon as we were in a position to do that and provide that funding, we would. The issue is we need to make sure that we're getting that certainty from the UK government in terms of what they're going to provide for support. And the First Minister also made that commitment this year at the Royal House and show. So as soon as we're able to provide that clarity, then that's what I would hope to put forward, because I know how important it is for industry to know what's coming down the line, to know what to expect so that they can plan for the future. But it's also hugely important for government. We want to be able to provide that certainty and clarity. It also enables us to plan a few years in advance rather than this annual cycle of budgets that we've been in for the past few years. You know, when we think back to when we were in the EU, we had 7-year cycles of funding. Seems like an absolute dream now compared to the way that we've been operating. So, yeah, I can only hope that we're in a position, but at least we get a few years in advance. That would be helpful for us all.
And the agricultural transition, it seems as though it's a long time coming in Scotland.
It is, but we want to make sure that we're working with the industry as we develop future policy. I think it does take time, but for me, it's taking time to get it right, hopefully, because we want to make sure that the policies we're delivering are working on the ground. What we have been trying to do, though, is provide as much certainty as and when we can do that. We have published a route map that we've been updating for the past few years, really to set out over the course of the next few years when support schemes will be changing, when we'll look to introduce the tiers of the new framework that were included as part of the Act last year. So again, we continue to update that, but I think it's being able to build those relationships and deliver a workable policy for me is what's so critical. So yes, that takes time, but I think it's valuable time that's being used to make sure we get things right.
And finally, you announced in March that you would not be standing at the Scottish parliamentary elections next year. Do you believe that you leave the Scottish agriculture industry in a better or a worse place than when you started 5 years ago?
I think it's probably more for the farming industry themselves to maybe set that out to you than for me. But I think there are some key pieces of work that I am quite proud of. You know, I've been a cabinet secretary now. It'll be 5 years by the time I leave next year. And it's been great being in the post for that long to build what I think are really strong relationships with people across the industry and the sector, and it's one that I'm so incredibly proud of. But I think we have done some really important pieces of work. One was the Agriculture and Rural Communities Act, which will really lay that foundation for future support. And I think we can't forget what the past 5 years have looked like. You know, we had COVID, leaving Brexit, war in Ukraine. It's just been one crisis after another, and I think we've been able to weather that relatively well, and that has been because of the strong relationships that we have between industry and government. And, you know, I've set up a food security unit in Scottish Government because we recognise how important our food security and producing food in our country is. So, I am particularly proud of some of those pieces of work. But
more work still to do.
Oh, of course. You know, but again, we're just at the start of the transition into the future framework of support. So there is so much work still to do, still to come down the line. I think we've got some really strong foundations there. You know, we've got so many passionate people who, that's one thing I've absolutely loved about this job, is getting out and about right across Scotland, across our islands, meeting people who are, you know, working on farms and crofts across the country. They really care about what they do. They care about the land that they're looking after, the food that they produce. And so that's where I hope, through some of the initiatives that we've done, the projects that we've launched, the legislation we've introduced, we're really enabling that to happen. Because I really want to make sure that farming and croft in Scotland thrives long into the future. And I think we have laid some quite strong foundations for that.
As Scotland's Rural Affairs Secretary, Mari Gujon. Now, Phil also caught up with NFU President Andrew Conan.
We welcome the fact that the government have agreed to up the Future Farm Investment Scheme from the 14 million to up by 7.4 million to 21.4 million. We've consistently been asking for that in recent months. We've recognised it's been massively oversubscribed, so we welcome that 52% uplift today.
And on the agricultural transition, certainly viewing from England, it feels as though it's sort of lagging behind in Scotland. What do you think?
Yeah, we're transition to a new system, future support system, is lagging behind. But I do think that although it's slow, hopefully we're going in the right direction. We're trying to shape things out with government, trying to work with government, influence and lobby government to give us a system that will actually, support active farming and crofting going forward. That is essential. Anything other than that would be a cliff edge for our industry.
And today, during your speech, you called for better security of funding, more longer multi-annual support, as we had under the CAP, for example.
Yes, that's one of our key asks going forward, and it will be for our manifestos for the Scottish elections next year. We need to see ring-fenced multi-annual funding for our industry. We can't work as an industry on an annual basis trying to thrash out a budget from year to year. Our industry needs longer-term vision and commitment and confidence.
And just finally, Mairi Gujon, she's now been in her role for 5 years and she's obviously leaving. How do you assess her performance?
I have to say the enthusiasm and the efforts from Cabinet Secretary Mairi Gujon can never be questioned. She's stuck in hard. You know, we're coming through a transitional phase. Obviously, we would like, progress to be quicker, but as I've already said, we need to have a direction of travel that goes in the right direction and delivers for us. So, you know, she's got our industry, I think she understands it, and probably sad to see her go, to be fair.
That's Andrew Connon talking to Farmers Weekly's Phil Case, who joins us now. Phil, some interesting comments there from both Mari Goujon and Andrew Connon. You suggested the agricultural transition, the switch away from the basic payment scheme towards more environmental support to farmers, has been a long time coming in Scotland. And some people think the relationship between NFU Scotland and the Scottish Government is just too cosy, that farm leaders should be holding politicians' feet to the fire a little bit more closely. But others say the partnership approach brings benefits.
Well, indeed, it's an interesting point you make there, because and at times during the whole conference, that the were NFU Scotland leaders which were saying that being in the room is incredibly important. And I think this is a little bit different from the relationships we see sort of further, you know, down south, shall we say, or even in Wales. They certainly do put great focus on getting in the room with ministers and you know, listening to their thoughts. And something which became very clear, actually, was Mairi Goujon, Rural Affairs Secretary, said she was really disappointed that they haven't held interministerial meetings with government officials, Westminster ministers, since about 7 months or so. And she said this has been a great shame, because there's been so many issues, in particular the inheritance tax policy. And she was really upset and alarmed that ministers hadn't been able to hold these meetings. But she did say that the next one is going to be held next month.
The same point occurred to me, Phil, when Mairi Goujon was asked about the need for a longer-term plan for Scottish agriculture. She more or less laid the blame for the lack of a long-term policy at the door of Westminster, rather than accepting the blame herself.
Yes, well, that's quite correct, because at the moment, what Scottish agriculture receives is all determined by the Westminster government, and that allocation is given, whereas previously it would be under a 7-year agreement under the CAP, and you know, when the UK was in the European Union. Now the different governments are given this budget, and they have to basically decide how they spend it. So under a block grant system, so it is competing with other industries, and also things like, you know, health, security, education. So then it's up to the devolved governments to decide how they spend this money. I suppose a key date going forward is the 13th of January next year, when the budget will be revealed for the following year. And NFU Scotland leaders, they're saying that they're going to be keeping a keen eye on this detail to look at the agriculture budget. They expect it will be a bit of a stasis, around about £650 million for agriculture and rural development. They don't expect there's going to be any big increases in the budget, because there's still all the uncertainty over the Scottish parliamentary elections in May and who gets in power.
And certainly, Phil, an acceptance at the conference that things are challenging for Scottish agriculture at the moment.
Yes, indeed, Johan. And in fact, challenging was the word which came out of a Slido interactive poll which was held at the event. So farmers were asked to describe in three words how they see farming at the moment. And the word which came out front and centre of this poll was challenging. Effectively, farmers do feel that are feeling the heat at the moment. That said, there was an upbeat tone at the conference, and NFU Scotland leaders were keen to point out that that people always need food, and indeed by 2050 there'll be 9.5 billion mouths to feed on the planet, and that's where farmers are going to fit in.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
At Avant, we create solutions to improve your livestock farming. Our compact loaders handle daily demands with ease. From feeding and bedding to cleaning and maintenance. With powerful hydraulics, a compact design, and a quick attach system, you can switch attachments quickly, navigating narrow barns and tight pens effortlessly. Our durable and reliable machines save you time and effort. Join countless livestock farmers who trust Avent to keep their operations running smoothly. Avent, your trusted partner in livestock farming. Search for Avent now.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
You're listening to the Farmers Weekly Podcast. Welcome along wherever you're listening to us from. You can email us podcast@fwi.co.uk. And if you're in the UK itself, you can also message us by texting the word farm, followed by your message to 88440. Louise, you've been out and about a lot this week.
Yeah, I've done a few miles this week and we've been looking at some crops. You know, we've really had the most fantastic autumn drilling campaign and everybody's been saying that. So these crops have gone in, you know, really optimum conditions and they're coming through. They're looking good. I'm saying that just as Storm Benjamin is hitting at the moment this week. But I think really that the timing of that is okay because I think the drilling is really done. Some of the pre-emergence herbicides are on. Some of them they'll just have to hold back now until we get rid of this rain. But everything's looking well and people are really pleased with how they've been able to get on actually. There don't seem to be any slugs, which is a good thing, but whether this rain means that they'll arrive now, we'll have to wait and see. But there are plenty of aphids around, so you need to monitor carefully and see what's going on there. But all in all, one of the best autumn drilling campaigns that many people can remember.
Certainly in recent years. Anyway, don't mention the S word though. Hugh, how's it going for you?
Well sown is half grown, isn't it? So yes, lots of lovely looking crops. This week I went on a soil workshop. And I'll be brutally honest, I haven't really been sat and been taught to about soil since I was at college about a million years ago. And it'd be fair to say that the current contemporary teachings in the world of soil are somewhat different to the wisdom that was espoused back in the early 90s when it was all about make sure the lime's right, look at RB209 and slap on the fur. Obviously, it's very different now. And that was really interesting. And we had a very good session in a field in Oxfordshire and lots of lovely people met and lots of good learnings. Very productive week.
It's all about, is your soil like cake or chocolate brownie?
Yes, it is. And that's the analogy, chocolate cake or chocolate brownie. So there you go. The one takeaway was that. And I don't think anyone ever talked about that when I was a young student learning about soils. It was all about rolling it into little balls and rolls and seeing whether it was loamy or clayey. But there was no talk of chocolate cake or chocolate brownie. Obviously, if it's chocolate cake, it's beautiful, it's spongy, it's got air in it, it's got roots, it's got loads going on. If it's slumped and horrible, it's chocolate brownie. It's all anaerobic and rather disgusting. So, yeah, that was the big takeaway. Chocolate cake versus chocolate brownie.
And were you counting worms, Hugh?
There was a bit of worm chat. But as the esteemed teacher said to us, you know, this time of year, things are starting to cool down. So the worms are all a bit more hidey. They're not as full on as what they might be. But yes, worms are a consideration.
Worms always a consideration, Hugh, just like commodity prices. And what's happening in the markets this week?
Thank you very much. Johan finished their deadweight this week at 647.7. That creeps up 2.2p on the week. The live weight, 366.8. That's gone up about exactly 3p on the week. Sheep prices slightly back, 662.3. The deadweight SQQ this week, that is back about 4p or just under 4p on the week. The live weight pretty much standard. Well, it's crept up by 0.1 of a penny. So the live weight SQQ this week, 300.9 pence. Pig price goes back, I'm afraid. That's gone back about 1 point. It's quite a bit, actually. It's gone back to 204, back from 205.3. So fair drop back on the pig numbers there. To the arable markets, feed wheat 162.10. That's gone back £1.90 on the week. Milling wheat has actually gained for a long time. Milling wheat, £177. It's gone up £2 on the spot. Compare that to a year ago when it was £219.10. There you go. You can even dream of such prices. Feed barley, 142.4. That's gone back 40p on the week. All seed rape, 396.1. That's gone back exactly £2 on the week. Feed peas, 193.3. That's dropped back £10 pretty much. 204 buys you a ton of feed beans. That's gone back £1.20 on the week. The diesel price is dropping, so that's a good thing. 65.48 Wednesday morning ring round gets us back from 66.9 last week. A year ago, it was actually only 67. So not too much change really, but at least it's going in a downward direction.
Thank you, Hugh. And for trusted market data delivered straight to your inbox, visit the AHDB Preference Centre at ahdb.org.uk/market-data to sign up for and customise AHDB market emails.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast. The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
And finally, this week was New Scientist Live, the annual festival of science at London's Excel Exhibition Centre. Farmers Weekly has a huge agricultural presence at New Scientist Live, supported by key industry partners. It's all about encouraging a better understanding of farming and getting youngsters into the industry. We went along and spoke to some of the farmers helping out.
I'm Andrew Metcalf and I farm up in West Lancashire. The questions they've been bringing us have been absolutely, you know, there've been a whole range of questions. It's been fantastic.
A lot of the questions I guess they're asking are things that we in farming probably take for granted and just accept the answer. So any unusual ones?
I've been asked a lot of questions about soil. You know, why soil important? So I've been talking about how we've been sort of trying to really focus on our soil, look at the microbiomes in our soil, trying to get it aerated, trying to get the clover to get the nitrogen into the soil. They've been really interested to know the science behind it. Obviously, we're at the science fair, so you know that's been extremely important to talk about. You know, the agronomists we use, the nutritionists we use. You know, how important the vets are. We're using the vets. They've been wanting to know about the drugs we use and why we use drugs, and you know, we're sort of saying, look, we're focused on the limitation of using antibiotics and drugs on farm. It's certainly been a high level of question. I'm very tired.
You're going to sleep on the train on the way home.
Hopefully I'll wake up before my stop. But I don't think I really realised how hard it was going to be.
My name's Heather Davis and I'm from Herefordshire.
So Heather, if we wander over here, we've got a life-size cow with covered in post-it notes. Tell me about this.
Yes, we've been asking the children, the young people, when they've been here and we've had a chat, sort of what their impressions are. We've done things from what are your favourite things that are made from milk, what's the best thing you've learned today, and yeah, we've had a lot of positivity and a lot of really good interactions.
And we can see that they're having a go milking this cow as well.
Yeah, they've absolutely loved that. I think it sometimes takes a bit of coaxing to get involved, but I'm hoping it's going to make them really appreciate their glass of milk tomorrow morning.
And what are you hoping to get out of being here at New Scientist Live?
So the first thing that we really want to achieve is a greater connection between STEM and agriculture. I think we've got such natural curiosity with young people that we really want to foster and just help them just plant that seed to be thinking about this in the long term.
I'm Jim Beattie and I'm a farmer from Northamptonshire. I grow for Weetabix and we're their most local grower, just 1 mile away from the factory. Many of the children here today have probably never seen a tractor before, let alone sat on one. So it's a privilege for me to see the smiles on people's faces and actually try and spread the word and interest of farming particularly today on the school's day to the younger people.
And what sort of questions have they been asking you? Have they surprised you by their knowledge or have they surprised you by the fact they probably don't know anything about about Weetabix?
Well, some of the kids have like baffled me. Like, I mean, some people know and they looked at it and said, oh, that's a 200 horsepower tractor. And I'm like, how do these guys know this? You know, they know a lot more than others, but they've asked some technical questions. A lot of them have been interested in knowing how many Weetabix blocks are made in a day or in a week, which is 70 million, which I must admit, I didn't know that before today either, which is amazing. A lot of them asking how much is the tractor cost these days? How much fuel does it use? So some people sort of really technical questions. One kid asked me what tyre pressures I run, and I was like, I'm big into sustainable farming, and so tyre pressures are important to me. And so I did have the answer to his question, but it just made me laugh that someone so young was so interested in that.
Now, I also spoke to Anna Reckleston, who coordinates the Farmers Weekly exhibition at New Scientist Live, and I asked Anna why it's so important to be there.
Farmers Weekly does this for advocacy, to help de-risk the future of our industry, to help engage, inspire, enthuse those outside of farming and agriculture about where their food comes from, and of course the diversity of skills and careers on offer across the industry. It's hugely important that we do this.
And farmers here this year, people can actually ask questions from the people that produce their food.
Absolutely. Having farmers on the stand as part of the Future of Food and Agriculture experience at New Scientist Live this year has made the difference. Having a handful of Arla dairy farmers across the weekend and having some Weetabix growers, as that connection between food and farming and the work that goes into it. And actually for those organisations, for Weetabix and Arla, who are of course familiar with consumers, consumers know their brands, and for the consumers therefore to understand the work that those businesses are doing to support their farmers to be more sustainable. You know, the farmer, the understanding what the farmers are doing to produce that, and the huge number of skills that go into it, and of course how they're helping to create solutions to address the climate problem that we have, as opposed to contributing to it.
That's Anna Eccleston at New Scientist Live. So Louise, Hugh, kids in London these days often know more about farming than we think they do.
Well, they do. Look, there's lots of it out there, though, isn't there? There's all the work that's been going on for years by all of the farming organisations for 30 plus years, going into schools and teaching. But I suppose that there's more information. And then, of course, you've got the whole rise of the TV farmer, whether it's, you know, Clarkson more recently. For me, the big change on the farm programmes was the Jimmy's Farm thing. What's that, 20 years ago nearly now, isn't it, Jimmy's Farm? Possibly a bit longer. And that was the start, I think, of a big change, just mainstream platform stuff talking about farming. So it's great that they do, though. And it sounds quite scary in terms of their insightfulness. I mean, phenomenal. Like I say, some of the best farmers are the ones that don't come from farming. They just jump straight in.
I'm very, very pleasantly surprised to hear that they know more about farming than we think they do. But that the only puzzle for me then is, when do they lose that knowledge, or when do they become less interested in farming? Because, you know, as we know, the general public don't seem to know a great deal or understand what it's all about. So let's hope we can find a way of maintaining their knowledge and keeping their interest.
Well, from what I saw, Louise, New Scientist Live is certainly trying to do that. And that is about it for this episode of the Farmers Weekly podcast. We do hope you've enjoyed what you've heard, whether you're in town or in country. If you have, please do subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. And if you really like what you hear, please do leave us a 5-star review. We'll be back next week with all the latest news, views and analysis of all the big stories affecting UK agriculture. But for now, until next week, I'm Johan Tusker.
I'm Louise Impey.
And I'm Hugh Broome.
Thank you for listening. This episode of the Farmers Weekly podcast was brought to you with NFU Mutual, offering you tailored farming insurance and a local personal service.